Nottingham.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by Northwest Airlines, clearing the way with Northwest Global Travel Partners to more than 750 cities in over 120 countries worldwide.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio with political editor Mike Mulcahy. I'm Gary Eichten. Today we're broadcasting live from the Rotunda, the Minnesota State Capitol. State Constitution says that legislators have to adjourn the 2001 legislative session by midnight tonight, but they won't be finished with their work by midnight tonight. In fact, legislators won't be done with much of anything by midnight. So a special legislative session will be needed to complete action on virtually all of the major issues that we've heard so much about these last 4.5 months. Today, in keeping with midday tradition, we are here at the Capitol to catch up on all the last day hubbub at the Capitol. We'll be talking with Governor Ventura in just a second, but Mike Mulcahy, I suppose the first thing we should do is note the lack of hubbub this today.
Right, Gary, with those big tax and spending bills still not agreed on. There's just not that much happening. They have reached agreement on a couple of other spending bills, early education and agriculture, but those aren't the big ones, and they're probably not going to get to the big ones today.
Governor Ventura, thanks for coming by today.
Hi, Gary. Pleasure to be here.
How would you assess the current situation now? Is it look like things are the log jam starting to break, or no?
No, I don't. It troubled me that after 5 months over here, really nothing got accomplished other than a lot of debates on banning things, you know, banning pop in school, banning tattoos from tattoo parlors, banning me from extracurricular work. Major things that really affect Minnesotans were left aside, and it's really sad because after 5 months, it's pretty hard for, I think, the legislature to justify why they would need a special session. It's obvious that we have to have one. Mm-hmm. I would just like to go on the record and state that if and when there is one, I don't think they should be paid, nor should they get per diem for it. Mm-hmm. They should come in on their own dollar because this is overtime for them that was caused strictly by them. This could have gotten done. But the point of the matter, like I called the leadership together about 9 days before the end of session to get an update. I had already met with them earlier individually that week, and I pulled them all together at one table, and I said, okay, where are you at? And they informed me they hadn't even spoken yet. This is 9 days before the end of the session.
Speaker Swigum said today that the legislators do hope to pass a few of those non-controversial bills today as a sign of good faith anyway. Would you accept that action as a sign of good faith?
That's their business. I'd like to add, too, between January 2001 and today, I've had 55 meetings with either individual or groups of legislators. So when you get a quote, as I heard earlier, that I gave the state of the state and disappeared for 3 months, is that accurate, what Poene said? Hmm. Well, 55 meetings I had in an attempt to help them do their job. Nothing that I did was not on time. My budget was submitted on time. We were open and accessible the whole time. My staff did an outstanding job of being there for any meetings that were available to help them move along. And I think that what it does to me is it, and I hope that it does clearly to the people of Minnesota, that it shows that unicameral is back on the front burner, because how we have to put up with this type of bicameral system that allows a system to operate in this manner is borderline ridiculous, in my opinion, they should have the courage now. The people should push to get unicameral on the ballot so that the public has a chance to vote on whether they want one house or two house legislature.
Governor, some people say this shows the failure of three-party government.
Really?
This can't work.
Why?
Because just a total breakdown of being able to get these bills done.
And how does, and define that. How, my budget was in on time, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So whose fault is the breakdown? The Democrats and Republicans? Let's, I have a list in front of me. During the Carlson administration, there were 7 special sessions called. This is my first. where I'll be faced with it. Then you go back into the late 80s, and you had both a Democratic House, a Democratic Senate, and a Democratic governor, and yet there were still special sessions called. So I think that that is total malarkey. That's just a way to put a spin so that there aren't any more independent candidates to be viable out there. They can spin it and say, well, this happened because you have an independent governor. That's ridiculous. Because if you look at the statistics right there of all the special sessions, these are all prior to any independent governor coming in. And as I said, Governor Carlson, in his 8 years, he had 7 special sessions in an 8-year period. So that's ridiculous to make a statement like that.
As legislators try to work out some agreements among themselves, are there any non-negotiable items as far as you're concerned, things that you simply, if it shows up on your desk, you're going to veto them?
Well, I'm going to stand firm on reform, that if there's going to be additional spending in any area, it must be accompanied by substantial reform. They have an opportunity, or they had an opportunity, to really walk out of this with everyone's head held high and very positive, that we came to an agreement, which the bicameral system, there has to be compromises. It's in the nature of the system. It has to be that way. And so for someone to think they're going to walk into this and not make a compromise, that's what bogs it all down, and you end up with a situation. Again, there's no excuse for this. They were here for 5 months, and we as an administration were there and available to assist and do everything we could to help them move it along, but they chose not to. And after 5 months, they have to try to tell the Minnesota public that that wasn't enough time for them.
So nothing that's totally off the table as far as you're concerned. You're open to whatever they might come up with.
Well, I'm open to looking and listening to everything they come up with. It doesn't mean that I'm open and I'm going to be supportive with everything that they come up with.
Mm-hmm. What do you think happened this time, Governor? I mean, the last 2 years, it's kind of come down to the wire, but they've been able to reach an agreement with you, and you've been able to reach an agreement with
them. Well, I think it's in some ways lack of leadership in the legislature, because on the House side, they seem to have some sort of executive committee that the leadership has to go get approval from. And to me, that's, you know, if you're elected to a position, then you ought to have the authority and the backbone to stand up and make decisions and take it back to your caucuses and say, this is what we've negotiated to, here's what's happening. But it apparently isn't that way. But then again, I can't speak fully for the legislature. That's why, you know, for people to say that somehow the administration's at fault here is utterly ridiculous, because that's why you have 3 branches of check and balance government: the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch. And each has to do their job. Each has to play their part and do their role, in which for the government, the bicameral system to be successful.
What's your thinking, Governor? When are you going to call the special session?
I have no idea. I'm not going to even get into that until what I want to do is maintain that they do as much work possible before midnight tonight. Get as much done as they can, and that didn't seem to be the case this weekend. I mean, they seem to have thrown up their arms, and many of them went home for the weekend, and I think that's terrible. You know, they're under the gun. They have to finish by midnight tonight, and I would expect and am pushing that they get as much of their work done as possible before midnight tonight, and then at that point we will assess what they've done, and we will assess at that point what steps we will take from that point on. And be assured that if there's a government shutdown July 1st, it is not the fault of the administration. This is the legislature that caused it. Because that much the same as what happened on the federal level when there was that government shutdown there, the blame went to Newt Gingrich where it belonged.
So you're still thinking you might not call a special session till after the 1st of July when the government would have to shut down?
Well, it would certainly put them under the gun, wouldn't it? If I called the special session July 1st at the point of a government shutdown, I imagine that would put them under the gun to get their work done and get it done very quickly. Again, I'm going to reiterate, I don't think they should be paid, nor should they get per diem, nor should their staffs or whatever monetary goes into this for this extra session. It should, because what's that going to cost the citizens of Minnesota because they couldn't do their work and get it done in a timely fashion in a five-month period?
Governor, thanks for coming by.
My pleasure.
See you tomorrow, I hope.
Well, I'll be here. I got to go to work every day, so, you know, regardless of what they do, I'll be here. Oh, you meant on your radio.
Yes.
So. Yes, I'll see you tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Okay, Gary, thank you.
Governor Jesse Ventura joining us at a broadcast location here at the state capitol, and indeed the governor will be on our program tomorrow at 11 to take your questions about the legislative session. Of course, the biggest single item in the state budget is public education, K-12 education budget. It is the item that has attracted so very much attention, with educators roundly criticizing the governor's budget proposal, saying it was completely inadequate. The House proposed substantially more than the governor. The Senate proposed even more than the House. And joining us now is State Senator Sandy Pappas to bring us up to date on where negotiations on the K-12 education budget stand. Senator, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Have you folks even had an opportunity to meet?
Well, Gary, unfortunately, the House has the gavel, and so it's up to them to call the meeting of both the K-12 Conference Committee and the Early Childhood Conference Committee. And they got the gavel on Saturday, and they refused to call a meeting on Saturday or Sunday, and they haven't called a meeting yet for today.
I see. Have you reached agreement on anything at all in terms of, I know you're waiting for some numbers so you know how much money you actually have to work with, but in terms of other policy issues, have there been any kind of an agreement on anything?
Well, we tried to have a discussion about sames and similars. It's called provisions that are the same in both bills or similar or technical items. And we put together our proposal on Friday night, about 11 o'clock, and the House said that it was too complicated for them. They couldn't figure it out, and so they weren't going to do a counterproposal. So, Gary, my guess is that this is a stalling tactic, and the education bill is being held hostage until there's an agreement on the tax bill. And I get the feeling that that's the case with most of the spending bills, is they're all being held hostage. And I don't think it's a good way to operate, that two people basically are negotiating, our majority leader and their speaker. Of course, their speaker has to consult about 15 people before he can make a decision. But I don't think it's a good way to hold everything up to negotiate over how big the tax cuts are going to be. There's going to be tax cuts. They need to be fair. They need to be balanced to homeowners and business. And I don't think the rest of state government should be held hostage. I don't think it's fair for the governor to paint all of us with the same broad brush. There are many of us, most of us, who are here working every day, who are trying hard to resolve this issue. The Senate Democrats are not holding up the settlement of this legislative session. We realize that with the governor and the House wanting to limit the growth of government, to basically underfund education and everything else in the state, that we can't win. We hope that the people of Minnesota are with us, but right now, in terms of the three legislative branches, it's the House and the governor against the Senate, and we can't win. We realize that we're going to lose, and we just want to end the legislative session with not doing too much devastation to state government.
Let me run down a few items that that we've heard a lot about during the session in terms of things that might be in this final bill. Mm-hmm. Profile of learning, is that going to be repealed?
No, the profile of learning will not be repealed. It hasn't even come up for discussion.
The idea that school structural balance provision, this idea that school districts have to make sure that they actually have money in the coffers to pay the teachers before they reach teacher contract agreements with teachers, is that likely going to be part of a final bill?
There might be something. It is based on a faulty premise that districts settle their teacher contracts for more than they can afford. That's not true. If you look at the data, districts do not settle for more than they can afford on average. There may be one or two districts that do. But we will be looking at that proposal to come up with a reasonable compromise. We're certainly willing to talk about it.
There was talk of perhaps of repealing this deadline, a January 15th deadline, when school districts and teachers have to work out an agreement. If an agreement isn't, contract agreement isn't reached, then the school mm-hmm. districts start losing money. The argument was puts too much pressure on school districts and it really takes away all their negotiating power.
Well, that is a proposal that's been the governor proposed and the House has proposed. Again, I think it's based on a faulty premise that teacher salaries on average have declined 4% over the last decade. I don't think teachers are making too much money. We have a tremendous teacher shortage in our state. We're not attracting people into the teaching profession. So the more we bash teachers, the more we create a demoralizing situation. If we try to take away their collective bargaining rights, the less people are going to want to be teachers.
Senator, how much of a potential is there here? I mean, last year there was the three-way split in the budget, and then at the very end, it was the profile of learning that hung things up. I mean, if the conference committees aren't even really meeting to talk about some of these details, what's the potential that once you get a big picture target, that one of these smaller issues really trips you up and it takes that much longer to get all this resolved?
I don't think that'll be the case. I think that the money is the issue, and it's basically how much we want to give back to the taxpayer and how much we want to fund our basic educational system. I think that's what it's going to come down to.
It seems like everybody has agreed in one form or another to the idea that the state should take over the basic cost of education, move it off the property tax, the state would pay for it. Is that going to have any impact on education in Minnesota, or is that purely something that will affect the tax structure of the state?
The idea is sold as a way of simplifying taxes so that the voter is more understanding of, you know, where the taxes come from and how they're spent. I don't think it's not going to mean any new dollars for education, and it actually could create a more unstable situation with education. When you look at what's happening right now, is that the state is not even willing to build inflation into the formula that school districts get. The more we take over the cost of education, the more the local districts are nervous about how much money they're actually going to be, how stable their funding is going to be.
Mm-hmm. And finally, Senator, the governor has talked over and over and over during the session about the need for reform and accountability in the school finance system. Is there going to be any change in that regard coming out of
Yes, there will be, and that is the direction we've been going in. And we've been working with the commissioner very closely on that. We will be looking at tighter accountability. If the state does provide dollars for class size reduction, we will be keeping track of that. We'll be looking at test scores. We'd like to do some cohort testing so you see if there's been improvement of the same group of kids between third grade and fifth grade, not always new kids. So we will be working on continuous improvement plans for schools. I think we all agree on that.
Mm-hmm. I guess I did have one more question, Mike.
Was it the teacher pay restructuring? There was a question about that.
There was that, yes.
Steps and lanes would at least partially go away, and there would be some sort of merit pay-based system. Might that come out of the bill?
Well, I wouldn't say it's not an individual merit pay approach. It's more of a team incentive mm-hmm. for teachers. And I do think we're open to that. In both bills, we've looked at that issue. I think we have more of the governor's proposal, and the House has a different proposal. We do think that that steps and lanes structure needs to be looked at, but I don't think it would totally go away, but
right.
There would be kind of a phase-in of a new system mm-hmm. based on results. The one thing you haven't asked me about that's very close to my heart is early childhood. And I am very disappointed that we're not apparently moving forward in both improving quality in early childhood and improving access to more kids, because I do think that's very important.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate you joining us.
Okay, thanks.
State Senator Sandy Pappas from St. Paul, who is the chair of the State Senate Education, K-12 Education Committee. And Mike Mulcahy, sounds like, goodness, they've got a lot of work to do.
Well, the problem is with that tax bill, it really is about the state taking over more of the cost of education, which gives everybody a property tax break. But until you get it figured out how you want to do that, you can't really put that education bill together.
Mm-hmm. Now, the governor was pretty insistent that legislators not be paid for any special session. Do you think that's going to fly?
I don't know how that would work. I think that, Gary, I know it might be hard to believe, but I think that may have been more rhetorical than a serious proposal on the governor's behalf. Dick Day, the Republican leader of the Senate, put out a statement this morning saying that legislators shouldn't collect per diem during the special session. The governor wanted to take it one step further and say not only per diem, that's the amount of money they can claim for meals and things when they're working, but also their salary they shouldn't get.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure that even when the legislature isn't in session, their checks keep coming, you know. I think it's an annual pay.
Staff salaries as well.
If you thought the nurses' strike was bad, wait till you see what happens if they try to do that.
I thought it was interesting, though, Mike, that the governor did not have any, didn't draw any lines in the sand today. Say, well, if they do this, by golly, I'm not going to accept that, you know.
No, he just left that threat out there of the government shutdown on July 1. And I don't know if that's the operative deadline now. I think maybe the legislative leaders would like to see Memorial Day as sort of the effective deadline to get this all done. But it's in the governor's mind anyway, it seems like it's that July 1 date.
Minnesota Public Radio's political editor Mike Mulcahy joining us today for our midday broadcast, which is coming to you live from the Rotunda, the Minnesota State Capitol. And unlike most last days of the legislative session, this is a relatively quiet day, really, because, well, there's so much left to decide. And normally the House and the Senate would be meeting in session on the floor, passing bills or trying to pass bills left and right, trying to beat that midnight adjournment deadline tonight. But everything's pretty quiet because no basic agreements have been reached on the real fundamentals of the session, how much money would be available for tax cuts, how much would be available for new spending programs and the rest. We are talking with a number of key legislators, and we'll continue our conversation here in a couple of minutes, so don't go away. Still to come, among others, Senate Majority Leader Roger Moore. But right now, let's catch up on some news headlines. Here's Greta Cunningham. Greta?
Thanks, Gary. Good afternoon. Secretary of State Colin Powell is calling for an immediate, unconditional end to Israeli-Palestinian violence. Powell says the U.S. will take an active role in trying to bring both sides back to the peace talk table. But until that happens, Powell says the Israeli and Palestinian leaders need to take steps to end the violence. He urged them to follow the recommendations included in a report from a commission headed by former Senator George Mitchell. That includes a halt of Jewish settlement construction by Israel and an all-out effort by Palestinian authorities to rein in militants. President Bush has accepted an honorary degree from Yale University, his alma mater. Bush joked that he had a message for the C students that they too could someday be president of the United States. The U.S. Supreme Court will review the government's latest effort to keep children from viewing online pornography. Lower courts have blocked a 1998 law that makes it a crime to knowingly place objectionable material where a child could find it on the web. Free speech advocates claim the law violates the First Amendment. The Justice Department claims the law correctly targets only material that's inappropriate for children. Former President Gerald Ford has been honored with the John F. Kennedy Profile and Courage Award for pardoning former President Nixon. Ford says he pardoned his predecessor because he needed to get on with the problems of our country. Senator Edward Kennedy criticized Ford at the time, but now says it was an extraordinary act of courage. Congressman John Lewis also was given a special Profile and Courage Award for lifetime achievement as a civil rights leader. In regional news, Governor Ventura says he has no idea when he would call a special legislative session. Ventura says he was not happy that many legislators chose to go home this weekend rather than work on tax and spending bills. Legislative leaders are trying to work out a way to pass a few of the less controversial spending bills before tonight's midnight adjournment deadline. The forecast for Minnesota has a wind advisory for western Minnesota today. It will be partly to mostly cloudy and cool statewide today with scattered showers possible, highs mainly in the 50s. At this hour, Duluth reports cloudy skies and 47. It's sunny in Rochester and 58. Partly cloudy in St. Cloud and 54, and in the Twin Cities, partly sunny skies with a temperature of 61 degrees. That's a look at the latest news.
All right. Thank you, Greta. About 31 minutes now before 1 o'clock. This is Midday coming to you on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Ankin along with Minnesota Public Radio's political editor Mike Mulcahy. We're broadcasting live today from the Rotunda of the Minnesota State Capitol. The state constitution says this is the last day, the day that legislators have to finish their work and adjourn the 2001 legislative session. They've been meeting for 139 days. Well, they will adjourn by midnight tonight. Constitution requires that. But they won't have finished their work. There is a lot of work left to do that will be unfinished, and thus a special legislative session will have to be called. Governor Ventura has already allowed that he will call the special session. He has not said, Mike Mulcahy, when that special session will be called.
Right, Gary, and it could be any time because that's the governor's job. He gets the sole power over when to call them in, and, of course, then the legislature has the power to decide when to adjourn, which is why typically when there's a special session, they will have a prior agreement beforehand, what they're going to do, what they're going to cover, and usually how long it'll take them to do it. And I imagine that's what would happen this time, too, before the governor would call them into special session.
Interestingly enough, the governor allowed a few minutes ago that he's still at least considering the possibility of holding off calling any special session until after July 1st. That becomes an important date because that's the day when the government officially shuts down if it doesn't, if new spending programs aren't approved.
Right. June 30th is the last day of the fiscal year. And, you know, we talk about all those projected surpluses and things like that. And they're based on the state's fiscal year, which ends June 30th. And if there aren't spending bills in place after that, the money can't be spent. And that's why you hear these stories of, you know, turning people out of nursing homes and things like that. That's what would happen.
Governor Ventura noted, Mike, when he was here at our table, that it's ridiculous in his mind, ridiculous to blame tripartisan government for this special session, the need for the special session, because there have been so many in the past, and there have been.
Yeah, I think I counted 40 special sessions over 144 years, and it's not quite accurate to say, you know, to make a percentage on that, because there have been more than one special session in given years. There were three in 1997. I'm sure our next guest, Senator Roger Moe, remembers back in the early 80s when there were a number of special sessions to deal with state budget problems. And I think one that that is sort of analogous to this one is in 1971 when the Minnesota Miracle was passed. That was the state's longest special session. Let's maybe not hope that that's an analogy here. That one lasted May 25th through October 30th.
Senator Moe, are we looking at a marathon here?
Well, let me, first of all, I'll make a slight correction
correct
to all
me,
of that.
Please.
That session started the day after the regular session, and we went until, we actually were in session every day up until the end of July, and then we recessed and
right.
came back for, I think it was a week or two in October when...
They still counted it, though, as...
Yeah, I think the conferees were still working, but at least we weren't in session. So.
Well, what's going to happen?
But no, this is not like that at all. This is not at all.
Should people out there in Minnesota be upset with you folks for not getting your business done today?
Well, I suspect that it depends upon where you're at. If you feel strongly about more funding for education and a tax bill that is fair, and reforms that are, in fact, true reforms and not basically shifting onto some other property taxpayer, then I think folks will understand why you have to stand firm and negotiate hard for what you believe in. And that's basically what we are doing. I won't take that away from the House or the governor. We have three different tax plans and three different budgets, and the difficulty of trying to reach agreement on that is very real.
I guess one of the questions that comes to mind is why wasn't this, all these high-level negotiations started quite a bit earlier in the process, knowing the fundamental philosophical differences between the Senate Democrats, House Republicans, and the governor, why didn't that process start much earlier?
Well, I suspect the complexity of it all is one thing. I'll be perfectly candid, from the Senate's point of view, what we tried to do is we tried to give the administration's plan as much of an opportunity to sell itself as possible. And that was difficult. As you know, we held out until right here within the last couple of weeks to try to broaden the base of the sales tax and to look at ways to make his overall plan work. To be perfectly honest, there absolutely was just no support for that.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the biggest sticking point is right now?
Well, from our point of view, it's we want money for public education. We think that is a good investment, K-12 and higher education, and we want a property tax relief plan that is fair to everybody, that does not end up with major shifts of the property taxes off of commercial and industrial and the second home that people might own onto mid and low-valued homes.
Senator, assuming when all is said and done that some major property tax relief bill is passed.
Yes.
People get a big discount or a big cut in their property tax bills.
Well, don't be too sure of that. That's, keep in mind, some people's idea of reform is to shift it to other classifications of property.
How do you assure long-term that whatever changes are made this year actually will remain in effect? So if a person does get that property tax cut, that 2 years from now they don't look at their bill and find out, well, goodness gracious, I'm back to where I was just a couple of years ago.
There's discussion, of course, I think from the House side on levy limits. There are... I believe there may be other mechanisms that they're looking at, but I think the bottom line is that we all know, I think to a certain degree, there's going to be incremental growth in the cost of providing public services, whether it's a city, a town or county or our school districts.
Senator Weiner was here, of course. We talked to her last hour, head of the Higher Education Committee, and she was quite unhappy, I think it's fair to say, with what looks to be the total amount of money that's going to be available for higher education funding in the state of Minnesota. Do you see that as a real big long-term problem for the state, trying to keep the colleges and universities strong?
It's a major problem. Major problem. I think if I recall correctly, I have to check my own notes because I can't remember from one to the other, but the Senate put $233 million into higher education, the House had $165 million into higher education, and the administration in its most recent plan has offered $125 plus $20 million for the Academic Health Center. That's problematic. That's a major problem. That translates into significant tuition increases for our students. I think it translates into loss of top faculty. I think it's long-term, very serious negative impact on the state. Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. Senator, I know you got enough on your plate here, but do you think by the end of this special session you'll have a redistricting plan on the governor's desk?
No. I think the intent from the actions up to today by both the House and the Senate was to pass plans, obviously different, to appoint a conference committee and to have that conference committee work through the interim.
Part of Governor Ventura's big plan was to make up for the loss of revenue, reduce property taxes, reduce the income tax, and so on, make up for the loss of revenue by extending the sales tax to services and the rest, arguing, among other things, that long-term, this is the way Minnesota's got to go, that's where the economy is going. Do you think long-term that is, in fact, where Minnesota tax policy is going to go?
Well, I think sometime down the road you will have a broadening of the base of the sales tax. I think that you will. But keep in mind, the governor proposed that in late January. We gave it up until about 2 weeks ago an opportunity to be heard, for him to sell it. And by the time it came to make a decision, and keep in mind the House had already made a decision months earlier that they weren't going to extend and broaden the base of the sales tax, we at least try to help hold off and try to give it an opportunity to be sold. And in the final analysis, overwhelmingly, the general public was rejecting it. So they did not do a very good job of selling that very key component to a very complicated property tax relief and reform system.
Governor Ventura has been very, very critical of the legislature. How would you assess his performance during this legislative session?
Well, I don't think that his rhetoric these last few days does anything to advance all of this. I can understand him saying he might disagree with the House's tax bill, or he might disagree with the Senate's K-12 funding bill. But for him to engage in kind of personal attacks and that kind of rhetoric serves no purpose at all. But then again... I guess we shouldn't expect anything else from him.
He said today that he thinks if there's going to be a special session, you folks should work for free. No salary, no per diem. For that matter, your staff shouldn't get paid either.
We'd be happy to do that if he takes the incomes that he's earned while a public official and just share it with us. That'd be a fair trade, I think.
Senator, is there an effective deadline for all this now? Is it Memorial Day? Is it just July 1? Or?
I think the logical sequence that would play out, based upon conversations with the administration, we should not push this to the end of the fiscal year, because the Department of Revenue has indicated that they need at least a month lead time to notify, you know, our partners in this business, which are the schools and counties and towns and cities. So I would hope that we would have this resolved by May 31st. That will give us a few days here this week to kind of wrap things up and kind of make sure that everything is correct as we go back. And I would guess that the governor would want to make sure that there is prior agreement on everything, and that's a logical expectation on his part. That's what every other governor has done, is to use the authority that they have for calling a special session to make sure that everything is done, so that when we do come in here, we can just routinely pass the budget and get done.
Senator, you've been here for, what, 30 years now? When all is said and done, are people going to look back on the 2001 legislative session as a good session or a disaster? What do you think?
Well, when all is said and done, I doubt whether or not the general public, will distinguish it from other legislative sessions. We'll have to see what will be the net outcome. All I can simply say is that the Democrats are arguing hard for an increased investment in education at all levels and a fair property tax reform and relief system that makes sure that everybody benefits and that we don't shift the burden of property taxes onto homeowners and farms and rental property in the out years.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe, who heads the DFL caucus in the state Senate, one of the three principals here, when all is said and done, get it winnowed down to about three principal people, I think it's fair to say. Mike Mulcahy, House Speaker Swigum, Governor Ventura, and Senate Majority Leader Moe.
And he says that if the governor says everybody should go without pay here, he should divide up his extracurricular salaries.
We'll ask the governor about that tomorrow when he's on our midday program at 11.
And I'm glad I won't be there for that one.
One of the issues that's gotten quite a bit of attention during this legislative session is the issue of racial profiling. And joining us now is State Senator Branham from Minneapolis. Thank you, Senator, for joining us.
Thank you for addressing this issue again.
Now, where do we stand on racial profiling? The last we heard, the Senate had a plan whereby local police agencies would be offered money for video cameras in cars if they agreed to voluntarily collect data on traffic stops. And then also, in addition to that, the police officers would pass out cards to people that they stop, indicating that if they were unhappy in some way with the way they were treated by the police, there was a toll-free number to call. House, as I understand it, had neither one of those provisions. And so where does that stand now?
Well, unfortunately, we had negotiations on Friday after the Senate, by a very strong majority, passed the bill that contained the result of negotiations between representatives of the three major law enforcement groups and representatives of community of color. We went into negotiations on Friday with Representative Stanek and Commissioner Weaver representing the administration. And unfortunately, by the conclusion of their two offers, which didn't contain any data collection, didn't contain cameras, didn't contain a study, didn't contain a complaint process, didn't contain the card distribution, negotiations broke off. One of my hopes is that perhaps there could be one benefit from the need for a special session, because it could afford an opportunity for folks outside inside the community who believe that racial profiling, we are too close to something, and then to revive negotiations. That's my hope. I know that the representatives from communities of color, and I believe some of the key people from the law enforcement groups see this as an opportunity, that my hope would be that if the governor got involved, if Speaker Sigham got involved, and if Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe said this needs to be something that we can arrive at something where communities of color and law enforcement during the special session can agree to something that would be a meaningful step for all parties. That would be something that would be a true benefit for a special session.
Seems like both the House and the Senate at least can agree on the need for perhaps better police training, maybe some more screening at a minimum. Is that going to pass the legislature?
I think the question has to be, Gary, is are we going to pass something that truly begins to bridge the gap between communities of color and law enforcement? We heard in the extensive hearings that we held in the Senate story after story after story of people being racially profiled. This is a civil rights issue. And if the state of Hubert Humphrey can't pass meaningful legislation that is acceptable to both sides, then I believe we will have failed this legislative session.
So just a stripped-down bill wouldn't really be acceptable to you?
No. It's not whether or not it's acceptable to me. The key criteria should be, is this something that the communities of color believe is a meaningful step toward addressing this issue in the state of Minnesota? It's not whether it not it's good for me. This, the question should be, is this something that community representatives and law enforcement can mutually say we are moving forward in a meaningful way?
But at this point, really, it's kind of sitting there, and maybe what could be revived in a special session.
And that is what I'm saying. I'm saying is, sometimes a couple of days off, if people are genuinely wanting to, in a good faith way, to go forward, this is something that I would hope that Commissioner Weaver and Representative Stanek would look very carefully at what was arrived at and begin to have those discussions with representatives from the community of color.
Thank you for joining us, Senator. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Minneapolis State Senator Jane Ranum joining us. She has been intimately involved in an effort to try to work out some kind of legislation which addresses the issue of racial profiling in the state of Minnesota. There are lots of other bills that we have not yet had an opportunity to talk about, Mike Mulcahy. I suppose most significantly, that giant Health and Human Services bill, $6 billion worth, second only to the K-12 education bill, and that contains any number of important and, in some cases, controversial provisions.
Right, nursing home funding, welfare cutoff deadline, and that's that also has, in the House version, the 24-hour abortion waiting period. The Senate version doesn't have that. Of course, the governor already vetoed the bill once with that in it. I think some of the welfare provisions are tied to the tax bill, and so they have to wait on that one until they get the tax deal done.
If you're just joining us, we are broadcasting live today from the Minnesota State Capitol. This is the last day of the Minnesota legislative session. The Constitution says legislators have to adjourn by midnight tonight, and adjourn they will, but they will be back at some point for a special legislative session to finish all of the work that so far has not been accomplished. Joining us now are a couple of folks who've been watching this legislative session unfold. In fact, they've seen lots of legislative sessions unfold, and they have joined us today to share their wit and wisdom, Brian Rice and Sarah Janicek. We should note that they fall under that dreaded label, lobbyist.
The governor's best friend.
Yes. Sarah, Brian, thank you for coming by today.
Thank you for having us.
In general, are you folks surprised that it's come to this, that when all is said and done, not much has been done at all.
I am. I would never have predicted this when we sat at this table in January, cold day in January, and today it's a cold day in May, that we would have this kind of meltdown, because I do think, however it shakes out, that it accrues to the governor's benefit. And he may lay low in the weeds to get a deal put together, but when all is said and done and this is all figured out, he'll have the mic and he'll be beating up on the legislature.
I guess I agree with what Sarah said, that I think the governor is ultimately going to win. Governors almost always do win. And last week, Speaker Swiggin was saying it was 2-1. And he was right, but he just didn't have the 2 and the 1 right. I think it's the governor against the two houses of the legislature. Unlike Sarah, though, I'm not surprised. I came over a little bit early in the year, and my sense all along in the session was that it was a session that was going nowhere because there wasn't kind of that ingredient or agreement about what they really wanted to get accomplished. So,
Governor Ventura has said, and he said it again very forcefully last week, that as far as he can tell, what's at the root of this problem is that Democrats are primarily interested in promoting Democrats. Republicans are primarily interested in promoting Republicans. And only when that's taken care of do they give a hoot about the people. Is that a fair criticism of what happens here?
I think that's grossly unfair. And one of the things that's so different about this administration as opposed to the Perpetrator Carlson administrations is that typically, and the governor has said many, many times in the last week, he gave him the budget in January, but typically there's a staff, a cadre of people that work for the governor, that work with key legislators in each funding area to try to put a deal together, and they participate in that for the last 4.5 months. In this case, the governor didn't do that. He threw his budget on the table and said, you do it.
I think that Sarah's right on that point. I also think when you're talking about a big tax change, that's the most difficult time for the legislature to do anything. I remember in the last session I can remember that was similar to this was 85 when they didn't reach agreement. David Jennings was the Speaker of the House. The governor had a pretty significant income tax proposal on the table. It changed the corporate income tax and brought down the, I think the slogan he used was 6 and 8 in the corporate rate. And until they got that tax bill done, they couldn't get any of the spending bills done. So they collapsed kind of like it is now, and they went into special session, lasted about 3 weeks. And before that, you'd have to go back to 1971 when Governor Anderson was there, and there was a major change then. Again, talking about income tax and schools. So when you get to those kinds of issues, you're talking about really the ultimate complexity of public finance in the state, and takes a lot of people a lot of time to work on those.
It seems like there are two issues here, though, and that the Senate Democrats want to spend more on education than the House Republicans, and inside the tax bill, they want to target more of the aid to moderate and low-valued homes as compared to businesses and high-valued homes.
Well, it's interesting, Mike. I think the most interesting thing that will come out of this session is whether or not we do enact some kind of property tax reform. Because after all, this system has been in place since the Minnesota Miracle in 1971. And part of that system was to have different tax rates on different valued homes, unlike the rest of the country. And it has kept the DFL in the majority for the last 3 decades because the data has shown that primarily those folks that live in lower valued homes have voted DFL. Now, the reason it gets more interesting now in this era when we're talking about redistricting is we've all seen the maps, and a lot of those Senate Democrats now represent people that don't necessarily have those lower valued homes. So there's a greater impetus to undo those different class rates.
Mm-hmm. I think the commercial industrial rate is pretty important, too. I mean,
sure.
They've already shrunk it the last couple sessions. I think that if they go as far as the House said, it will be a pretty dramatic change in funding for education, local governments, all up and down the line, which has a lot of implications.
I'll go back to comments about the governor's performance during this legislative session. He sat here and said, you know, people who criticize my lack of involvement don't know what they're talking about. He said, I had, then he dragged out a piece of paper, 55 meetings with legislators during this session. I did not just give my speech and walk away.
I think that is true. I was here the night that he was in the, Senator Moe and Speaker Swiggin were in his office. I was walking back from the House and the governor's curtains were open, and I could see him with his hat on and his chair and he's rocking back and forth. And I think that there's just been this clash between three different views, and it's going to take a while to work it out.
surplus? Is it tougher to deal with surplus than it is with a shortfall? You would think this would be a politician's dream when they came in here in January, $2.5 billion, give or take a few million, $100 million, to distribute in tax relief, new spending programs. Gosh, you'd think this would be great.
Always.
Well, you know, I've gone back and forth on that, having lived through the lean times and the good times, and I think they're equally as bad. And I think part of the problem that they're having this year is that there's no real mandate from the public on what they want to have happen.
It's always tougher for them to spend surpluses. The more things get on the table, and I think now, at least in the session, the session has produced this much. They're down to property tax as the change. Sales tax is out. Income tax is out. And that, my guess is the confrees are probably only about 50 to 100 million apart, but it's where they put that 50 to 100 million. Is it on commercial industrial or is it on lower valued homes is probably the hang up.
And then you have the final piece that's new, and that's the expectation that surpluses will return to taxpayers, which is a new phenomenon in the last few years.
Folks, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Ryan Rice, Sarah Janicek, who are watching the legislative process here as official lobbyists, folks who get blamed for a lot of bad things, but without them, in many cases, the process of government simply, well, the wheels of government would grind to a halt.
And they may have already done that even with them, Gary, given the situation we're in today.
We're just about wrapping up here, but joining us very briefly, Attorney General Mike Hatch. Attorney General Hatch, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Is that all right?
No, that's fine. That's okay.
Your assessment of what's happened or not happened this year?
Well, we only look at it from the perspective of the office. We had a few bills up, and some went well and some didn't. In fact, most didn't. We had a Patients' Bill of Rights bill that got to the Senate floor. The Senate author, Don Samuelson, indicated that he'd get it passed if the House would move on it, but they did not. We had a prescription drug bill, basically a copy of the main bill, did pass the Senate. I think it lost by one vote in the House, but who knows, that may come back, should come back. And just about everybody, if you recall, last election, both parties throughout the state, metro and urban, all supported doing something on prescription drug pricing. And if they want to go home and say they did something, this is the bill to vote for. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the waning hours of a session, but it doesn't mean that they can't pass something on it. We had a bill in with regard to assisted living centers that passed, the criminal justice information system, which has been discussed for a couple of years now. There looks to be about $15 million appropriated, which is good. And there were some criminal sentencing initiatives that we had, which will be passed over to the next session. You want to take a look at consistency with regard to sentencing. So it's been a mixed bag.
It sounds like they have it in for you in the House.
Well, I mean, some of these proposals are more inclined probably to a proactive type of government, and that's probably not necessarily reflective of the House at all times. I mean, there are differences of opinion, and I respect that.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Hatch.
Thank you.
We're out of time. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Attorney General Mike Hatch joining us here at our broadcast location. And Mike Mulcahy, we are out of time. Thank you so much for stopping by today.
Glad to do it, Gary.
Riding shotgun. That concludes our special coverage from the Minnesota State Capitol, but we will have more on this last day of the legislative session coming up later this afternoon on All Things Considered. Also, make sure you check out our website, minnesotapublicradio.org, for lots more information about the issues that the legislature continues to wrestle with. You also have a chance to get up on our soapbox online and have your say, express your opinion on the issues that we've been discussing. Also, make sure you join us for midday tomorrow. It should be a lively program. Governor Jesse Ventura will be our guest at 11 o'clock tomorrow, and he'll be in our studios to take your questions. So get your questions ready for the governor and give us a call tomorrow morning at 11. Sarah Meyer is the producer of our midday program. Kara Figenshue is our assistant producer. We also had help today here at the Capitol from Bill Wareham. Scott Liebers is our engineer today. Steve Griffith was our engineer back in the studio. From the Minnesota State Capitol, with political editor Mike Mulcahy, I'm Gary Eichten.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by the Minnesota Historical Society's Alexander Ramsey House in St. Paul. On the web at www.mnhs.org.
On Mondays, All Things Considered, a local jazz pianist who spent two decades behind the scenes steps back into the clubs with material from a new CD. We'll have that conversation on Mondays, All Things Considered, weekdays at 3 on Minnesota Public Radio.
Partly cloudy sky, 61 degrees at KNRW-FM, 91.1 Minneapolis and St. Paul. The Weather Service is still forecasting more rain this afternoon with brisk winds and a cloudy sky, high near 60, about where it is. Cloudy and cool tonight, 50-50 chance for rain with a low in the low 40s. Tomorrow, cloudy, cool with more rain.